So first of all, Delhi, Jaipur and Patiala are all the three places where I have been posted. So Jaipur I have not been posted, but I have been there. Jaipur is number of times. Patiala, in the Air Force, I was posted there. Then it used to be a signal unit. And of course, Patiala, I was posted as well as I worked in the center. And Delhi in CME, Central Medical Establishment, again Indian Air Force. So good to see. basically it's a question-answer session format. And while everybody was coming, there's already a question. So we'll start with that. It's a very, very practical question. The ego is the problem. And ego is the helper. Because if we don't have an ego, then we are pushed around like a football. And that's not a good thing to happen. So, ego helps us to individualize ourselves. It's important. Because the divine does not manifest only through the wide cosmos, but also through the individual. So, individual is an important unit in the total plan of the divine. But the individual becomes a bar because individual, after all, is a small little unit. And the world is too large and the divine is even beyond. So while in the play of what is called as ignorance, ignorance means when we don't know reality, the true nature of things, ego has its place so that we are not pushed around. But when it comes to growing in our spirit, expanding beyond the limited little magic circle of nature, which we identify ourselves with, then ego becomes the bar. So the question is, when we try to get rid of the ego, something within us tells us this is ego. And for a moment we are able to master it, and then after some time it returns. So well, that's because, first of all, it's one part of the mind playing with the other part, usually. So a better part of the mind, let me put it like that. It's like you're working, there are many people working in a house. So you have the workers, you have the supervisor, and you have the head supervisor, you have the chief manager, and all of them are trying to manage. So chief manager tries to tell the supervisor, that's not how you should be doing. And the supervisor says, yes. But he also knows that the chief manager is only the manager. He is not the owner. So he is, after some time, when the chief manager is little away, it plays its own trick and gets back to his old system. It's like often you'll find here means in India, people will say, "Haan, ho jayega. It will be done." But you're not sure whether it will be done or not done. It's probably just a way of saying. So ultimately, the ego goes only when one comes in contact with the divine consciousness. Whatever kind of contact it be. Because suddenly there is tremendous humility. It's like you suddenly come out of a closed house out of which you have never walked out, and you enter into the wide world with the vast sky above and ocean, and you realize that who are you who thought you are so special? So it is the contact with the divine which finally, but that too, there are steps and stages. So while we are seeking the divine, what do we do till then? So the yoga speaks about the three types of ego, or we can, for our purposes, reduce it into two types. One is the tamasic and the rajasic ego, which continue by the past momentum. Tamasic ego, whatever I believe based on my family, whatever my traditions, whatever my ways of life, I regard them as best and highest. It can go on to food. Huh? I have food ego. I have traveled all over the world, but I still want to have the typical Indian food. North or South is okay, but anything else, noodles, pasta, nahi chalega. Now this is because I have grown up like that. So, I mean, it's there in the fabric of our life, in the whole fabric of our existence. Ego is interwoven. So tamasic ego is something which continues in the dull, mechanical, habitual way. So it is this which brings back the habitual reactions. Somebody I don't like, some kind of people I like. If somebody says this, I'll respond like this. These get inbuilt. Often they are from childhood. We pick up these ways of life. And it's very unfortunate that all our life, we remain a slave and we think we are on the road to freedom. In the sense that we say, I am a free person. But we are not free. We have just picked up these things. The other is the rajasic ego, which is based on whatever I think, whatever I decide, whatever I wish, that's right. So these two kinds of ego are a bar to spiritual life. But we have to bring these two kinds of ego under a more sattvic control. Sattvic ego is the first step that man must take. You can say humanity, but it's a rational, because even humanity can be a very rajasic, like, well, a communist brothers will speak about the whole humanity, but that ideology springs from a very violent rajo-tamo guna. So even humanity, some people may say we should live for humanity and humanity should live for its animal instincts. So we may use terms, but by humanity, if you mean the greater good, yes. But humanity is simply an extension of the ego. Whatever is our ego, based on that we mirror humanity. So our idea of liberty, our idea of equality will all be based on my ego, I extend it. But sattvic ego is that you want to do things, bring them under a rational control. That means, in simple words, be reasonable. Don't think only about yourself. Think about others. Think about those people who are also connected with you. There is very beautiful writing of the mother, which I very much. I mean, everything is so beautiful, and so one of them is that it's never a good thing to build your castle of happiness on the suffering of others. So it has helped me so much. You know, whenever you feel prompted to do something which you feel is your joy and rightful joy, still when it gives suffering to others, is it really worth going that path? So, sattvic ego will tell us that. Is it the right thing to do? Now, again, in the right thing, there are two opinions. One is the conventional moral ideals. So, conventional moral ideal belongs to society. It changes. It is, in one country there would be one moral ideal, in another country it would be another, and it changes. So it's not about that. But it's a deeper sense of what is good, what is right, what is true. So that is the sattvic ego. So when sattvic ego is cultivated, where we sacrifice our pleasures and immediate happinesses for the sake of something greater, then we are ready for the next step. That is the divine. So there were two ways in India of cultivating the sattvic ego. One was the written shastra. So there is the book. So people who are religious nature, they'll say, no, in my book it is said I shouldn't do it. Love thy neighbor, so I should love my neighbor, even if he's a devil, I must love him. Or many such things are there. So injunctions of the shastra. But it's always very limited. Because when somebody said love thy neighbor was not a terrorist. I mean, so... Now things have changed. So Shastra has to be also discovered inside you. Shastra is not a rule book or a rigid. You have to go into the spirit of the Shastra. Shastra. So that's how one has to evolve from within, something called as a personal ethic, and what has guided me and what I have seen, understood from writings of Sri Aurobindo and the mother, is something that helps us tremendously is the sense of the true, the good and the beautiful. Sense of beauty is a wonderful signpost for ethical. Is it beautiful what I am going to do? Many things will cease if we just give that consideration. Is it true? Is it really my truth? Or am I doing something just because I'll get instant pleasure? Like people often keep saying, I love you, but it doesn't mean anything. But they do it because it's going to give them a immediate gratification. They actually don't love. And they get into problems. But at that point of time, they are driven by that rajasic ego, and the rajasic ego puts a cover. It's okay, yeah, it's fine. But actually, it requires great courage to, you know, live by the truth. And the third is good. So is it really going to create harmony, order, peace, or is it going to create disorder, chaos? So when we begin to live our life by that discernment, the sign is there is sukham and prakasham. This is a state of inner gladness and by and large peace. Truth makes us very peaceful. This is something which I can vouchsafe. You know, it takes great courage, but you don't have to fabricate things. So when we have practiced this, then we are ready to go transcend the ego. If we try any other way, there is a problem. There is likelihood of boomerang. And so this is the principle. It's a long journey, but worth every inch of the effort. Okay, so any other questions on any subject? Anything which is going on in the mind, you need not be interconnected or related.
You often talk about seeking divine within, seeking this guidance in yourself. If you have faith that you have this guidance, what can be the symbols?
Yeah, so there are certain signals that there is actually a divine guidance. Faith itself is a very good signal. This doesn't come to anybody. So one is blessed if one has the faith that there is a divine guidance. This is a signal. Along with that, whenever there is a need of something, let's say you want to know something, you will somehow, maybe you will open a book, maybe you will meet someone, something will happen outwardly which will give you an indication, and not one indication. There will be indications, one after another, showing you the way. This again happens with those who are already reached that point of a conscious divine guidance. Because divine guidance is there in life. Everyone, whether one knows it or doesn't know it. But because we are covered by the smoke of ignorance, we are unable to perceive it. So second is that whenever there is a need, there will be a some indication or the other will come. Third is that when we follow a certain trail, which according to us is a kind of divine guidance, it will bring subtly peace to you. Whether it brings peace to others or not will depend, because sometimes people's ego may be hurt and they may not be happy with the path you are taking. But the beauty of divine guidance is peace and joy is its content. Divine is of the nature of peace and joy. So you will experience peace as well as you will experience a joy. It will be a sense of lightness in the being. They are all subjective signs. That burden we carry all the time of fate, of what may happen. People who are led by the divine consciously, who become somewhere conscious, they experience a state where fear and anxiety tends to drop away, not just diminish. Because of the inner sense of the divine being with them. Now, there is no proof or evidence outwardly. That's why the word science comes. Though, of course, proof, evidences of another kind begin to appear. Shobindu uses the word signals of eternity. Fear drops away, which includes fear of death. Because divine by nature is eternal. He is... To use the word immortal is to belittle him. He is beyond that. He is the giver of immortality. So when you are led by the divine, guided by the divine, death ceases to be real. So fear of death goes away. Anxiety goes away automatically. We are tied by, as Sri Krishna says in the Gita, by 1,000 bonds of anxiety and worry. We are always worried. What may happen tomorrow? What may happen day after? As the divine begins to govern our life, these things just go away. So there is a state of inner peace, felicity, joy. There is a sense of fear goes away. The anxieties go away. Another very good sign is, normally we are burdened with wants, wishes, desires. They actually go away. I won't even use the word diminish to a vanishing point. But that's the process. Because again, the presence of the divine is a... It acts like an assurance and a security that what you need will come to you. It's not that When I say desires go away means you don't need anything, you live like an ascetic. No, you don't. You don't need to. That is a deliberate process of trying to lead a certain kind of life. It's an attachment to an ascetic way of life. You are not attached to that. But what you need, and repeated experiences will keep on justifying it. That what you need will come to you. It may be dress, it may be an inner need, it may be an outer need, anything for that matter. So more and more these experiences come, so one begins to lead more and more a life of inner freedom and joy. So ultimately the divine guidance is to set us free. Free in a state of peace and delight. Will the circumstances change? Now, yes, they do change. But they don't change anymore according to our wish fulfillment. They change according to the original divine plan. So for example, Meera's circumstances changed completely when she started receiving the divine guidance. But the circumstances were not what a conventional Kshatrani or Rajputana princess would have imagined. It was not that her husband underwent a great change and he said, no, 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 you are a saint, please live inside the house, I'll worship you. That didn't happen because that was not the original plan of the divine. The original plan was that Meera goes far and wide as far as that time space could allow and spread the seeds of divine love. Even in the heart of the hardcore Mughals and everyone. So she had to move out of the house. This was the divine plan. So if you see outwardly, people may raise this question, but inwardly she was more and more in tune with the divine plan. So circumstances change, but they change in accordance with a deeper truth, and one begins to be aware of it, though it's very difficult for somebody outside to understand and relate. Like Lord Rama's, he's the divine leading himself, if you want to put it. So outer circumstances are very different, but they are the ones which are meant to fulfill his mission. So each one of us comes with a certain work to do, a certain purpose, and that purpose is not measured by big or small. It's a divine purpose. So all the circumstances will begin to conspire to lead you towards that. From the outer point of view, they may appear tragic, they may appear happy, it doesn't matter. But they will lead you towards that. That's another sign of divine guidance. It may turn sometimes life completely topsy-turvy. But well, divine doesn't respect any laws and rules. He acts in freedom. So these are some of them. There are many others, even objective signs, but this is just two. One of the things that one is ready for the divine guidance, that's also very interesting since there's no question and it is that there is a love for solitude. One seeks more and more to be quiet, to be by oneself, rather than go partying. Partying is a sign that one is unhappy inside. I have been in Air Force, so I know what partying is. And I always felt, of course, there it is compulsory. But need for partying is a sign that you are very unhappy inside. Just as the need for approval, it means you are very unsure of yourself. So when the divine touch is there, all this drops away. One is sure of oneself, confident of the grace. One doesn't need somebody else to appreciate or somebody else to ratify, because they get like self-ratified. So, any other subject? That's a very good question. Yeah, so how to control anger? There are several aspects of this. One can look at it from many angles, so I'll just touch upon some of them. Actually, anger stems from a certain kind of weakness in the vital parts. It's an inability to contain energy, so one has to throw it out. That's one of the things. In an extreme case, one has to throw it out regularly because the vital is narrow and weak. So, very important to strengthen the vital first. It sounds very paradoxical, but so physical exercises that really make the vital strong, all exercises which help in self-control. From simple things like delaying gratification. You have your favorite food in front of you. Don't be the first one to eat it. Wait. Wait a little more. I'm saying not in normal second, but if there is an anger issue, this is one of the things which helps. So these are simple practical things, deep breathing exercises. They are, I'm first on the very surface. So these are very simple things to integrate. Then one has to enter into one's own psychology and see that why does one get angry. So normally it can stem from two sources. One is narrowness of the mind. One cause of anger, you don't think like me, so I have a right to get angry. I mean, basically behind it there is an urge to control, dominate, and others should think like me. If we really reflect a little, we realize that it is absurd, because each one has to grow along their own lines. And we may have differences, and we should celebrate differences as long as they're not harmful to the world at large. That's what is important. If there is a difference which is harmful to the world at large, that's when one has to intervene. But even that intervention should not be with hatred, anger, and all these things. It should be for the better good of the world. So that's how I look at it. So at the mental level, there will be differences of opinion. And more one gets angry because the other person has a different kind of opinion. So there is a rigidity of the mind, a kind of perfectionism. It's the upward side of perfectionism, where you want things to happen in a certain way. It can go to the extent that, well, you want somebody has put the photo like this and you get very annoyed. Not you, matlab, I mean somebody. Why have you put it like, it should be like this, and you get angry. So one has to understand that there is behind it an obstinate will which has its advantages, but well, we have to allow that each one, as long as, or if you feel it should not be like this, go and correct it gently. That's the simplest way. Or point out in a beautiful way. So this is one of the things. Another, it comes from the vital. There's the commonest cause of anger is the desire getting frustrated. So it may be a so-called good desire. Mother's work should be done, but I have my own ideas of mother's work. So, when it is not done, I feel I have a right to be angry. But that's, then I am missing the point. Mother's work is a work which is done in harmony. And so many people, because this is a common problem in collective life, that each one has their own idea of what is mother's work, or what is a good work, or what is good for the world. And in their own limited circle, they try to do it. And when things don't happen, then people get angry because they want things to be done in a particular way. Or it can be the commonplace that one has a desire. See, children, very often they get cranky and cry. And mothers understand that he's hungry. So many children I know, mothers know, are kuch nahi, he's hungry. And after feeding, the child becomes quiet. Dads don't understand. They try all kinds of tricks. So very often it's this hunger of the vital for something we are craving for, which creates anger. Now, this craving, as Shubhendu used the word craving, soul of desire, it uses nice covers. I'll give you one example, some examples. Husband-wife fights take place. So I'm saying from the side of husband, it could equally apply to the wife. So the same forces move everybody. So the wife or the husband may be very unhappy because of some reason. They may be even wanting to get rid of that fellow. Okay, but this is not acceptable. It will hurt you very badly, moral sense. Hurry, how can I think like that? So it expresses itself as anger because, well, you are having some expectation which are not being fulfilled. That expectation may be physical, it could be emotional, it could be any kind of expectation. Maybe simply an exchange of some sweet words, ki thoda mithai bol lo. So if that's not happening, it's, but we have this tendency, we'll never say it straight. Also because if we say it straight, it may also hurt the other person. So there is a warped ego which acts in this way for no reason. Have you noticed that when two people fight, sometimes they bring up an issue which is 10 years back, you know, it's all piled up things. So this piled up anger we'll come to in a moment. But we have to look straight, what is making me really unhappy? Well, my wife or my husband doesn't fulfill my expectations, fine. Look at it squarely. So what is the solution? Another wife? No, it doesn't help. Because human nature is of the same pattern, only there are variations. There is no guarantee. Human beings are human beings. So then what is the way? One is that, okay, there is acceptance of whatever is there in life. I am not talking of situations where there is a spontaneous feeling of love, but it's very different from, because one is unhappy and goes somewhere else, that's a very different state. So instead of that, one looks and says, well, maybe here the sattvic aspect comes in, that maybe my expectations are too unrealistic. So I start looking at the other person's point of view, put empathy that maybe, you know, the lady is overworked or the husband, he is too busy and too overworked. Probably I need to give him space and time and allow him to recuperate. So one of the reasons why anger comes very often in family sitting is this, that there is no time given to sit and relax and just be quiet. So it's so important that when people come back to home from the office sitting, and it's so important that wives should also work, by the way, because otherwise, naturally, they are waiting for a whole day. This fellow will come and listen to me. That fellow has already come, had a hard day with his boss and with his colleagues and subordinates. Now he comes and expects, sits on the couch and says, why don't you make a cup of tea? Now she also had a busy day with the maid servant and trying to do things. Now it's important that when we come back from work, we should allow little time to each other to settle down. So important. During that settling down process, take a bath. Physical bath is very helpful, by the way, but also psychological bath. Just sit and imagine that mother's light or some white light, blue light, golden light, you think any light, I mean, for that matter, which is just coming down and sweeping and relaxing you. So one of the things is never start expressing when you are in a state of anger. Because when we begin to express, then complicate things endlessly. Resist the temptation. Because what we are doing, we are basically unburdening ourselves. But we need to unburden. So where do we unburden? This is a way of unburdening. And offering to the divine, writing in the diary, these are things which are making me unhappy. Anything about partner, about anything in life, workplace. So there has to be some place where you need to, there has to be catharsis. Another catharsis for those who don't believe in anything higher is to substitute and sublimate anger in sports. One of the excellent ways of substituting anger. So when you are hitting a stroke, your urge to hit and get angry is washed off. So it's very helpful to cut down anger, any kind of sport. Another thing is music, piano or something like that. It's another way, dancing. Yes, I mean, depending on one's choice, one can pick up. But tennis, piano, dancing are very good choices. But anything. And if one cannot do all this, listen to this music. So why music helps is, say what anger does, anger, excitement, even lust, sexual excitement, what do they do? Fear. So they derail the system. So if you really observe closely, we'll say breath changes, heartbeat changes, whole system is restless. Okay, anger makes us restless. Hunger, even desire for food. So when the system becomes restless, so harmony is getting, without a realizing, derailed. And illness is coming as a result of it. Because one place disorder starts. And there are corresponding organs. So if you are very bitter, oh that man, oh that man, oh that man. So liver is taking the brunt of that poison. Similarly, if one is overcritical, heart is suffering. So all these emotional states, we need to set them back in rhythm. They are disturbing our rhythm. So simply playing music in the background. That's one of my simple things. Earlier I used to play bhajan, now Sunil Das music. Even if you don't need, doesn't matter. It's something beautiful. So some people feel, they tell me, but mother's music or Sunil Das music is going on. You may not be always thinking the right thing. I said, yeah, but this is going to set me right. I look at it the other way. So people often feel I must be very pure before I can come in contact with the divine. My thought is that when you come in contact with the divine, you become pure. So I let it play. With mother's voice going on, and I have seen it has tremendous effect because it there, your background, a consciousness is developing, which is, music is so beautiful to set your inner rhythms right. So when the inner rhythms are set right, all the rest is fine. Then one has to look deeper still, that what is the root of desire? Is ego, root of desire is ignorance, all that is a long subject. But at some point one has to catch the bull by the horns. So at least the desire should be more sattvic in nature, which gives consideration to others. I mean, extinguishing desire is a big subject, so I'm not entering into that. Again, it goes only when the divine contact and the delight comes. But even in ordinary life, sattvic desire, and the Gita uses a very interesting term, desire that is consistent with dharma. So dharma is about swadharma. So there is a soul movement. Now, in that soul movement, even anger interestingly finds a place. So that is called a righteous wrath. We should not much talk about it, but there is something called as a righteous wrath. Sri Aurobindo and the mother both speak about it. Righteous wrath. Wrath. That the soul feels touched very deeply. And it responds as if a tongue of fire has taken the form of a sword and you want to slay. This is a genuine feeling which both mother and Sri Aurobindo have said. It is true. That's not anger, though it may look like anger. It is something which is like a divine action. So we have to understand the difference. So when we live by the Swadharma, then there are things which may look like anger, but they are not. Like demand for justice. Maybe somebody's Swadharma and somebody sees injustice happening. One responds in a maybe a godlike manner, godlike impulse. So that is a different thing. We should learn to distinguish. But desire generally is the root of all anger, frustration. Frustration of desire, expectation. One has to cut them down, be more sattvic, understand that, well, we are not here just to fulfill desires. And then learn to accept from the divine. There is a very nice saying in I think Punjabi, Ishwar ke bhaande mein rehna. Live by the will of the Lord. Accept, okay, what I have received is a grace. What I have not received is a bigger grace, but at least a grace. Surrender and acceptance are the big antidote to many, many problems of life. So these are some of the things which help us every day, little quietening meditation, little bit of peace. Invoking peace. Peace is an antidote to anger. Often in life we, you know, the natural joy of life is there given to us, which goes missing after this period of time. Why? Because we put bars between the natural joy and, you know, between life. So we, now in children, there is a natural joy. Even their anger doesn't last. No, you see children getting angry and after some time they immediately, you know. So, but as we grow up, we develop this, these bars are like put us in prison. If I have this, I'll be happy. If I don't have it, I'll be angry. So recapture that childhood. So it is so true that we lose this natural child within us. We start taking life and things too seriously. This is a big problem. There is somebody who is supposed to manage things, let us manage him also. Let's do our bit. But know that in the last analysis, he is going to call the shot. The story of a man who was, you know, some gundas surrounded him and there was an interchange going on, and he started praying to Shiva, and Mata Parvati nudges him. Go, is Shiva takes up his trishul, says, I am going. But within a moment he keeps the trishul, again sits down in meditation. He says, what happens? He said, no, now he has also started abusing, he has also picked up a lathi. This is not that you should not pick up a lathi, but very often when we don't understand the larger play, the greater plan, the wider picture. So wideness is a big antidote to many of the things. Every day to practice wideness, imagine the stars, the sky, or divine as the subtle ether. And the ultimate meditation, which is the biggest antidote to anger, lust, everything, is meditating upon the idea that all is in God, God is in all, and God is all. There is nothing else but the divine. It's so powerful, so powerful. Simply when anger or anything is coming, which is just mother, 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 all is mother, within moments it just vanishes. It's the ultimate remedy. So this meditation of all being in the divine being in all, and all as the divine, and it's an idea. So one did not sit in Sukhasana or any asana and practice it, walking, living, whenever there is something which is likely to inside, which is bringing the consciousness down or projecting outward. Mother, 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 all is mother, all is mother. It just, it acts like a big dissolvent to everything. Worry, fear, anger, everything just vanishes. So.
Let's say somebody is there beating a dog.
Beating a dog?
Yeah. And automatically you feel like shouting and telling them to stop.
Say, the thing is, you can shout without anger.
Without being disturbed.
Yes, that's, anger is an inner state. That's why I said outer, somebody may feel compassion and cry for justice. So, this is an outer action. When you say firmly, stop, you can say this, stop. Or you can say, stop it. What are you doing? Now you see the difference. I am only just acting. But you know the difference. And if the person is not stopping, you are getting into a kind of disturbance inside and pity. This weakness of the vital must go. You can fight a battle without anger and hatred. Any other question?
How does faith help in the therapy?
Faith. So first we must distinguish between belief and faith. Belief is a mental concept. I may have a belief that God will cure me, whatever God I believe in. So the problem of belief is, I believe that it'll cure me, but when it doesn't get cured, maybe one day, 2 days, the belief starts getting challenged. Because it's in the mind. It's not taken up by your whole system. But faith is something which is nothing can, it is naked. You snatch everything from a person, faith will remain. It's the essence of being. It's called as, the Gita speaks of it as, you know, Shraddha Vanalabhate, Shraddha Mayo Mam Purusham. Man is his faith. So faith is different from belief. We must understand that. So often people go with this, like spiritual healing, seances, all this is about belief. You have belief that a Sadhu Baba will cure you, he'll probably cure you. But equally he may not cure you. It may be a temporary cure. So that is a different story altogether, because that is helpful to many who are of a simple nature. Especially those minds which are not complicated. I have seen this, people getting healed of things because they had the belief. I have witnessed one very closely, that put water and tulsi because a person was on the verge of dying. So next door neighbor, so he called my father, Brahman Devta, so puja paath karne wale Brahman Devta. Aap Ganga Jal, you put some Ganga Jal and tulsi in his mouth because he has to depart actually. So my daddy used to worship Ramji and Ram, Ram Ram ka naam leke, he put it. Now next morning he was fine. He took it that, you know, Brahman Devta ke haath se tulsi aur Ganga Jal, ye to ultimate remedy mil gaya Ram. So it can work magic. But equally, it's, I have seen the other also. I have seen a person die of snake bite and they kept on doing mantrupchar. Nothing happened. So when we have faith, we must understand faith does not mean, faith in the divine means what? Whatever happens in my life is for good. It's called as Kalyana Shraddha. So faith will never insist that things should happen my way and the divine should be compelled to do things for me. There are people who take that attitude. So I know people, somebody's daughter is a real life example. Daughter or son, let me generalize it, has cerebral palsy. Now it's a condition, genetic condition from childhood. So the person is praying to mother and then one day he writes to me that I've been praying, why is something is not happening, when something will happen. I have complete faith in the mother. I said, delete the last line, all the rest is fine. So we start expecting faith means we'll change the laws of the universe, turn topsy-turvy. That's not faith. Because there is a way that the divine works, there is a way the law operates in this world, there are things one has to go through and they are necessary for our own evolution, for somebody else's evolution. The divine is not going to turn this entire creation topsy-turvy because to satisfy one person's faith. I have seen people after reading Savitri or knowing the story, literally saying, my husband went away, he has not come back. So I tell them, because he's not Satyavan, nor are you Savitri. So you see, what else to say? It may sound little brutal, but that's the truth. I mean, you have to understand conditions apply. With regard to healing, healing is not only a question of the spiritual force acting upon the person. There are several conditions which are operating in this world which have come up. There are no absolute conditions. They are all relative. They are habits of nature. But they are important. And they are here because of the evolutionary nature of life. So for example, if you have been smoking since childhood and you develop a lung cancer, well, this is one condition. You may have a very bad heredity. It's another condition. Somebody may be practicing spiritual healing, saying you have faith and now you are going to heal. But that fellow may be thinking, pata nahi hoga ki nahi, his mind may be going on. Bagal wala doctor was saying something else. So all this is going on in the mind of the patient. So it's not like it can do magic. And people who like to do magic are taking themselves and others far away from God. God doesn't indulge in magic. And mother used to say these kind of magic are dangerous because sometimes you can do that, but she says you give sanction to certain vital forces of falsehood that should not have a right for existence. So God, that faith healing is not magic. You have faith, it's a tremendous power by your side. If your faith is that, well, mother is with me and she'll take care of everything, if it is rooted deep inside yourselves, then you will not even be constantly praying or worrying. This is very nice when Niruddha asked Aurobindo that I have prayed to you, do I need to remind you again? He says, time to time you can remind. Then the fact that you have surrendered yourself completely, then what may happen to you, you are not worried. But that is the best condition for cure. That's the best part. Then you are not, you know, that faith that I have faith, I'll be fine. But you're going on, somebody sends a WhatsApp thing, you know, for the heart. This is better. Now you want to do all kinds of things. Huh? So that's dvidha nishtha. Lokasmin dvidha nishtha. So to have faith is a big blessing and a big boon. But very, very rare. And it doesn't come just because somebody tells you, have faith and you'll be cured. It doesn't last. It stays for a short while, and there are many aspects. His body may not be receptive to the spiritual forces. That's another very important aspect. His time may have come. His soul may choose to depart. So many things are there operating. The law of karma, call it whatever. There is a story of somebody who had died very young, and mother said that person had come only for this experience of life. So when it comes to healing, let's put it this way, that faith is one factor, a very important factor. And if somebody can persist with this faith, with an unwavering mind, unwavering, it's the rarest of rare thing, then yes, anything is possible. Provided, as I said, anything is possible doesn't mean going away from the divine will. There's a story, real story of somebody from the ashram. And it's a very interesting story. It has two parts. So he was suffering a lot, having a lot of cough and tuberculosis, and the internet spread. He was an elderly man, suffering a lot. So he asked the children to go and tell the mother to relieve this suffering. So the mother said something like this. Yes, but he is very attached to the children and the family. So here relief of suffering meant change the body. Already your time has come. So the children came and told him ki this mother's reply. He smiled, and within 24 hours he left the body peacefully. The second part of the story is mother saw his soul. And she saw his being rather come and bow down at the samadhi. Then his whole being was gathered like a service flower and go up toward the service tree, high up, and she saw him fuse with Sri Aurobindo's supramental light. And then she tells the reason. She says it happened because all his life he lived with only one thought, that is of serving Sri Aurobindo. That was his sadhana. Not into some deep meditation. He said he lived with this idea, I want to serve Sri Aurobindo. That is faith. And then you are ready to accept anything. Then the best happens. Mother speaks of this, that the best happens to those who take this right attitude. So power of faith. But that is very rare. If one has it, mother has said, it's a treasure, you just guard it against all intrusions. So that way. So faith does miracle compared to, like, you see somebody with faith, things will happen in their life which you can't explain medically and you wonder how it has happened. But this doesn't mean he lived for 400 years and like Satyavan, he lived for 400 years. I mean, he may, but I'm just saying that, you know, you can't at some point. So there are many factors. Even a person with a very strong faith, one day he may feel that my work is over and I need to leave. You may be relatively young. Swami Vivekananda, did he lack faith? No. At 39 he left his body. Because 2 years back he realized who he is. And he started calling mother. Rain on misery. He started inviting all these things. And Sri Ramakrishna had told him that I have deliberately locked his mukti and given the chabi to the divine mother. He won't get mukti. But if he discovers who he is, then he will run away. So after his visit to Khir Bhavani, he developed tremendous love for mother. Otherwise he was a, you know, jnana yogi more. And of course karma, jnana and karma, but devotion was not so active. And suddenly he's all mother, 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 mother. Within 2 years he left his body. He developed high diabetes and all that is only, all spiritual people seem to have diabetes for whatever reason. But that's the whole story. So faith does things which are seemingly impossible. But it doesn't mean it'll do anything and everything. And it's so that would be, that line is very thin. It should not be changed into a blind belief, superstition or anything like that. When I was a child, I remember having severe gastroenteritis, and I was in a hostel, 10 year old. So dad came, brought me, somehow I have come. That time you have to even to find a doctor and who can give some medicine. And first thing he did, because I still have a conscious memory of that, everybody, oh, call the doctor, and doctor is coming on the way, but he just takes me, and I was so weak that he could lift me up. 10-year-old boy lifting is not that, but he lifted me up, put it before his idol of Sri Ram, whom he used to worship. He said, your child, you take care. End of the story. Your child, you take care. I have seen something similar when I had kidney stone. It was Saraswati Puja, and whole night I was arranging the pandal. And then I developed this terrible pain, typical classical renal colic. So I was lying, and the doctor said he has to drink a lot of water. I said, no, I have to do Pushpanjali. So he said, no, you can't be fasting. I said, no way, no injection, nothing. I am not taking anything till I do Pushpanjali. Pushpanjali time was 11 o'clock and my pain was going on from 3 o'clock in the morning. Doctor came around 7. So defiant, then my father had to request that, please can you prepone the Pushpanjali time only for this boy to offer flowers to the Divine Mother. So they agreed, they were all nice people, all small community. So I remember walking somehow with the pain, giving Pushpanjali, 9:30 coming back. then the doctor comes, I'm fine. So, and then urine had blood in it, everything, but everything cleared. Now, there comes the problem. If somebody at that time would have done some magical, mystical processes, he would have got the credit and made a show out of it. I cured a case of renal colic and you have to do this. No, sir, that's not important. When things have to happen, they happen. And completely, I even remember the time, 9:30 going for the Pushpanjali, 10 o'clock my pain vanishing and I'm saying I'm fine. But I could take after that fluids, but after that. And then all the X-ray and all followed and everything was clear. So there is a way that, but again, the other part, I developed renal colic here also, to complete that story. So when I developed renal colic here, it blocked my urethra to an extent that it had to be operated. So how are we to reconcile? So then what happened this time, basically it was because of something in the constitution. This time with the stone, the mother removed that difficulty. And I knew this is what is happening. And after anesthesia, when I am coming out, I am simply saying, when I come out of anesthesia, I had beautiful experiences in that anesthesia process. So many forms of mother I was seeing. And then the doctor is waking me up, all this, wake up. And I am saying, all can be done if the God touch is there. And I said in a groggy state, Savitri, Savitri, oh my Savitri. So the doctor says, who is Savitri? And he is asking, hush, hush, wait to my wife. She said, no, don't worry, he is all right. They went away. They knew that Savitri is there, so he's fine. But the doctor was very perplexed. Who is Savitri? He's not remembering his wife. Not remembering anyway. So now that is another experience. So what I meant is that, see, now I could see that this was stone removal, was a way that mother was removing a stone-like resistance inside. So it works both ways. But as a child, it's a different story. We'll tackle the resistance later. So she said, okay, for now I am just clearing it off. We'll see it later. So we have to see it in a very total perspective. Okay, so all is the mother. This is the mantra.